Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Morning Show with John and Hugh. If you're peeking ahead to next week when the Nationals come in and the Tigers come in, also want to let you know that coming up soon is the Tycoon Music Festival that Entercom is presenting, starring Kendrick Lamar, Chris Brown, Trey Songz, 50 Cent, and more. It's Saturday, June 8th at Solaris Amphitheater in Lakewood. Tickets are on sale at Ticketmaster.com. All right, Braves, this afternoon, a 3:45 start our time, 3:45 our time this afternoon, in a getaway day game against the San Francisco Giants, headed off to St. Louis after that. Kevin Gausman will get the start tonight. John Smoltz on the Midday Show yesterday, and went and talked to John about Smoltzy about, of course, he's not the big TV star, about the bullpen, the pitching, and whatnot, and began that interview, Andy and Randy did, with how the inconsistent closer position and the inconsistent bullpen are affecting this club.
Oh, it is something that, you know, when you think about how clubs work, from how they're structured to the mentality to the strengths and the weaknesses, what people have, you know, all kinds of analytics that'll tell you X, Y, Z about players, but what they can't tell you is the impact or the effect on certain losses or certain wins. So in other words, you're not going to have continual comeback wins for stretches of period of time. It might be one year where you just have a unique year where things work. It's a special year. And conversely, when you lose games that are in position to win, they impact the club in a great way, especially if that's a concern leading into the season, right? So everyone has your strengths and weaknesses. Here's a concern. Hopefully somebody will step up. Maybe we sign somebody. Even back to the role when I did it, you know, it was an unknown for me. I was learning on the fly, but relative success makes you feel stronger about your pen. So we had what was known as one of the best pens in the game because we were successful, and it became a strength, and it became a weakness for other teams. They were like, if we don't have the win by the lead by the seventh or eighth inning, we're going to lose. Mm-hmm. That's a great place to be on a team. And what I've always said is that role is so important, and it defines your club in several ways. If you lose one of those games every once in a while, you sit there and you go, it's a fluke. But if it becomes a point of concern, then all eyes are always going to be on the bullpen. And unfortunately for the Braves and the Phillies and the Nationals and really right. The Mets shouldn't have had this problem, but they are. The Mets had the strongest bullpen going into the season. The Braves had the concern who would be – they had arms, but who was going to fill the void. The Phillies, same thing. They lost a tough one last night, had the lead. But these are the kind of things that people don't understand. When you go into the clubhouse, it takes a veteran ball club or a club that goes, that was a fluke, our bullpen's strong. So it's just having blown saves in my career, fortunately I didn't blow a ton, but when I blew a save, it was worse than any loss I've ever gotten in my life as a starter.
I bet.
Not even close. That's how much you feel bad when you walk into the clubhouse because you feel like 24 other guys are looking at you going, gosh, we had that one. So, you know, I mean, this is going to be ongoing until it gets fixed and or addressed, until people start feeling more confident in the role, because with the role comes experience, and when you don't have experience, then you don't know what to draw from.
And John, we've been talking about this closer situation, and you were a great starting pitcher, and then you eventually became a great closer, and now we have these young pitchers here. They're trying to find their role. We know that everybody wants to be a starter, but not everybody can be a starter. What was your biggest transition? Because you were a veteran, we're asking young guys to do this. What was the biggest transition for you mentally and physically?
The biggest thing is just forgetting what just happened and then getting right back on the horse again. I mean, the greatest lessons I learned was not every game's savable. And we try to approach it that way. You know, guys don't not necessarily brought in these situations anymore, but when you're coming in with runners in second and third, one out on a one-run lead, that's a tough save. You just got to keep the game going. So I had to learn to keep the game going. Even if you blow the save, give us a chance. Don't try to make the miracle save. Don't try to strike everybody out. Don't try to win the game that basically is, if you could just keep it going, would be better. And it's the mentality of it. You know, it's like today's a new day. I got to forget what happened yesterday. Easier said than done.
Right.
Young pitchers can't do that without going through it.
We think we have a superstar here in Ronald Acuña. I think you've called a couple games. You've seen what this young man can do. And the big thing coming in was, where was he going to bat? Because we know that the Braves took off when he was the leadoff, but analytics and everybody says he should be the cleanup hitter behind Freddie. Now they move him back to the leadoff spot, and he's back raking again. Leave him there or try to adjust and see if he could be the cleanup hitter?
You know, that's a great question, and certainly dilemmas. The analytics have basically said that you have to have your best two hitters hit second and third. I don't typically agree with that, although for over 162 games, I understand why it says that. You're getting shared more at-bats in that top of that lineup over the course of 162 games. Personality's got to come into it, and comfortability's got to come into it. I personally, if I was facing Ronald Acuña, I would much rather face him in the leadoff spot than in the fourth spot. He can do so much damage and create so much stress for me personally that if they can get runners on in front of him, imagine in the day and age of having to unfortunately face Albert Pujols all those 10 years in St. Louis when he was dominating and he was batting in the three or four spot. Imagine today if Albert Pujols was the young Albert Pujols. He would be batting second, in some cases maybe first. Thank you very much,
right,
as a pitcher, because I don't care about a guy hitting a leadoff home run. I do not care one bit. But the way clubs are building their clubs now is they're putting power they're jumping the start right away. I understand it universally. That's what makes sense. But when you get to a playoff situation or you get to a big series or you allow a really good pitcher to navigate through a lineup with a lineup full of strikeouts, then that goes right out the window. The Braves have a really good lineup, so that argument works for them. He can bat first, second, third, fourth. It doesn't really matter as much. Personally, I'd like to see him bat in the fourth spot with Freddie Freeman in front of him and either Markakis or Riley or whoever. The lineup of the Braves is not an issue. It's a great lineup that's going to provide a lot of opportunities to score. But across the board, you know, I think you can make a lot of arguments for other scenarios that maybe are not a no-brainer. George Springer has reset and redefined the leadoff spot.
Mm-hmm.
Good luck trying to find a bunch of George Springers having the kind of year he's having where he can steal, hit triples, hit homers, and set the tone. But again, Houston's lineup is so good, George Springer could bat anywhere. It's the product of your lineup that can sometimes answer those questions you ask.
John Smoltz joining us here on the Midday Show with Andy and Randy. You mentioned Freddie Freeman batting third. That's where he's going to be, obviously, whether Acuña's behind him or batting leadoff. Why does Freddie Freeman get taken for granted the way that he does?
I don't know. In the world of analysts and people who are baseball people, I don't think he gets taken granted for granted at all. But, you know, he's a guy that's played a long time, been one of the best first basemen in our game. Joey Votto's up there. There's a lot of competition at first base. I think now that the Braves are winning again, it's going to bring to the forefront the appreciation level of Freddie Freeman. Look, we live in an era where the latest, greatest, newest thing is always on the tip of our mind. I mean, we're seeing young, dynamic players come in, and we're like, oh, my gosh, Vlad Jr., they're going to be the greatest hitter in the history of the game. We're into propping him up and putting so much pressure on these guys that we do kind of like let the premier, consistent, great players of our generation just, oh, well, that's Freddie Freeman. That's what they're here. But when the Braves win, I think it brings about a full circle of Freddie Freeman's career. And this guy is as good as it gets in an era where strikeouts are no big thing, and this guy doesn't strike out,
mm-hmm,
right?
Yeah.
And homers and average usually don't go hand in hand. This guy hits homers and average. So when you start dissecting it, you start realizing that these outliers, like a Freddie Freeman, are right in the conversations for me, like a Mike Trout. He's a separator. You think about Freddie Freeman and, let's just say, Bryce Harper. Well, there's a big difference between the two. And Bryce Harper's come in, rightfully so, with all the flair and all the kind of, you know, celebration of a guy, not to mention free agent. But Freddie Freeman basically put blind resumes over their numbers, and you're going to end up picking the blind resume that's going to go to Freddie Freeman.
John, 2 days ago, this kid that we have here, you know, Mike Soroka, looks like he has the goods to be, I guess you want to call him the ace yesterday. I mean, we finally got a Braves pitcher to go 8 innings, and he would look so good doing it. From your observations of him, and I don't know who has it better to ask than you, what have you seen from him that looks like it makes him it's going to make him an ace?
Well, he's a pitcher, and that you can't say universally in the game. There's a lot of throwers. There's a lot of guys with great stuff. He's Greg Maddux 1.0, 2.0, whatever you want to call him, and that's a tough and kind of high compliment to a guy who's a Hall of Famer and one of the best in the business. He knows how to pitch. He's got separating stuff from movement to location, and that's why, gosh, his ERA went up. He gave up one run in 8 innings. I think we need to think that's about setting him down. But I love seeing the development of young pitchers get the opportunity to pitch and continue to pitch. Now, he has last year, and there may be a little concern with how do we keep him healthy. You know, the front shoulder to me is a very important part to the actual throwing shoulder, because if that doesn't work in unison, you put a lot of pressure on that shoulder. But I love watching him pitch. His changeup is fantastic. His movement is unique, and his windup is unique. You can't cookie cutter box everybody and say you need to throw like XYZ. That's what makes pitching so difficult, but at the same time, you know, in this era, unreliable from an injury standpoint. And so we're in a time frame where if you start saying, oh my gosh, 100 pitches, he's at 100 pitches, oh my gosh, he's throwing 200 innings, we have beat down so many starters' mindset to think that pitch limits and innings limits are the precursor to staying healthy. Well, how's that working?
Right.
Not
in an
good
industry?
Right.
It's not. And so the industry will change, I believe so, and the organizational teams who step out and get outside the box and think a little bit more like, we're not going to be so obsessed with this. We're going to watch the kid. We're going to use judgment, but we're just not going to follow the regiment that's gone on in the last 2 years. I think those organizations will be benefiting their players and actually developing them into greatness. And that's what I want to see. As a broadcaster, as a fan of the game, as a guy who played it, I want to see greatness be developed. I don't want to see them being born out of a shell and they either have it or they don't. I want to see guys struggle. I want to see him be given the ball every 5 days. I want to see the development, and that. And I promise you, teams who do that will be better in the long run, because you won't be messing with the identity of a great player or the potentially of a great player by trying to confuse him by every time he struggles, take him out, or every time he struggles, send him down, or every time he struggles, go to the pen.
Wow.
Soroka, the Braves, right? They've got so much talent. It's going to come down to which ones do we decide we're going to let develop on-job training and benefit that way.
John Smoltz with Andy and Randy and the on-job training that we're getting from some of the players. All right, right now, not on the job, but your chance to win $1,000 just by texting.
Now it's time to reveal our national signing bonus code word. The code word is
TREE, T-R-E-E, TREE. This will be a generational divide here, because I think the modern generation here would say, I am Groot, right? I mean, when you say tree, that's what they would think of. And I immediately think of a big guy from Clemson named Wayne Rollins, who played for the Hawks.
Tree Rollins.
Yeah.
I remember him.
Tree to 72881, T-R-E-E, tree to 72881. Message data rates may apply. Do not text and drive. Complete rules at 99thegame.com/rules. Tree to 72881. That is the national signing bonus code word of the hour. All right, so we've been having some fun this morning with a tweet that I sent out. That's why I was getting tongue-tied there. And I said, we talked earlier, I said, by the way, did you know that, and this is true, that if the playoffs started today, the Braves would be in. They would be the wild card team. They'd be the wild card team on the road, but they would be the second wild card team playing at Milwaukee. They're currently a game and a half behind Philadelphia. And then I looked down the standings, Hugh. Miami's the worst team in the National League, right?
No question.
Okay, they're 15-31. Do you know, and this is not to put you on the spot because I didn't know this, do you know who the second worst team right now is in the National League? The Washington Nationals.
The Nationals. Interesting.
They're 19-30.
And they were the one team that we felt that was going to be a three-team race in the East. That's interesting. Haven't really had a been paying too much attention
no
to the Nationals.
To. Yeah. No reason to. They're 19-30. They have the second worst record in the entire National League. They're 19-30. And you think we got problems? We're in the wild card. And above 500, sending Kevin Gausman to the mound today. How do you like them apples? Jason Longshore standing by. We're going to talk a little Atlanta United soccer with the color guy as they head off to Salt Lake City. We'll join Jason in a moment after a CBS Sports Minute and Boomer Esiason. Morning show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92 on the game. Atlanta United getting ready for tomorrow night. Late night start in Salt Lake City, Utah. A 9 o'clock kick against Real Salt Lake at Rio Tonto Stadium in Salt Lake City.
Utah. Like we say Utah or Utes.
It's just a thing from California. Jason Longshore, of course, is the color analyst and all-around blogger and everything else for Atlanta United. His interview is brought to you by Heineken 0.0, great taste and zero alcohol. Hey, Jason, what up?
Good morning, guys. How are you?
I'm doing good. Hey, Jason, last night, Atlanta United got some honors, huh? How about this? At the Sports Business Awards in New York City, Mercedes-Benz Stadium named Sports Facility of the Year. Bigger than that, Atlanta United, of all the pro sports teams, named the Pro Sports Team of the Year.
It's a big deal. I mean, it's the second MLS team to do it. Seattle Sounders won it in 2010 in their second year. And, I mean, you're beating out the Warriors, you're beating out the Washington Capitals, the Bucks, the Milwaukee Brewers. It's a very prestigious honor, and it's not just about on the field, it's off the field, it's the business side, it's what they do in the community, it's the whole package. And, you know, we've talked about it a whole lot since Atlanta United launched. They're really, I think, demonstrating there's a new way to do professional soccer in the United States, and it can be as big as you want it to be.
Yeah, there's no question about that. You know, when you look at their impact and their footprint on the city, they've done a tremendous job of ingratiating themselves to the city and just getting everybody excited about soccer. But looking to Friday's match, you know, we're looking at the stats and everything. Tito Villalba looked like he's not going to be out there able to go on Friday, like he's going to be a scratch. What does that mean for Atlanta United moving forward when you have so many people that are potentially going to be out and, you know, you're already kind of playing musical chairs as far as the folks that are going to be out there?
Is next man up. And when you get into these situations in a schedule, you know, this is why that month around the Columbus game was so important. It was almost like a second preseason, because you have to figure out, one, you have to get everybody ready to contribute, and then figure out who's going to step up. And I think a player we've seen step up here in recent weeks is Deion Pereira. Pereira was the most dangerous player for Atlanta United late in the match on Sunday at Red Bull Arena. Would not surprise me at all to see him get a start here on Friday night.
Talking with Jason Longshore as they get ready for the 9 o'clock kick, 8:30 pregame with Mike and Jason tomorrow night. 9 o'clock kick in Salt Lake City against Real Salt Lake. You look at the team and you think about, you know, where they're at coming off this New York Red Bulls game. Now going to Salt Lake City. You went to Vancouver. You went to New York. Salt Lake City, I don't know how many miles that is, but, man, there's got to be some jet lag in there, isn't there, Jason?
Yeah, the schedule's brutal, and it's something that you knew was going to be an issue with Major League Soccer's schedule this year because of the change to the playoff format, moving MLS Cup up by about a month. That compressed the schedule even more, and you were adding more midweek games. When you add more midweek games, if you can't manage spreading them out, you get situations like this, and the travel is part of it. My biggest issue with the way the schedule has worked out is Friday night will be the fifth time in a row that Atlanta United's playing a team that has had more rest than them. And it's a day with Salt Lake. It's not a huge difference. But, for example, the Red Bulls had a full week. Atlanta played two games from when Red Bulls played their last game until when they played Atlanta United. It's unacceptable. It's, you can't have a schedule that way and have competitive balance, because it does create mismatches and it affects the way you have to approach matches. I mean, Atlanta goes into that against the Red Bulls sitting back, playing a little more defensive, playing a little more direct. The red card actually changed things and put the emphasis on Atlanta attacking, and they didn't really have the legs to do it, and they couldn't break down the Red Bulls defense.
Talking with Jason Longshore as we get ready for Real Salt Lake. What kind of a team is this in Salt Lake City?
A talented one, a young one, a very inconsistent one. I like Mike Petke, their manager, a lot. I think he gets the most out of the players he has. He is completely comfortable rotating their lineup. He will keep guys on their toes. He'll give guys a start kind of in a bit of a surprise. He'll keep his bench motivated. So it's a little hard to predict what the lineup will be, but he's got young guys playing with a lot of confidence. And I look at a player in Albert Rusnak, who's one of the most talented players in the league, and he kind of goes under the radar a little bit because he's with Real Salt Lake, not one of the big markets. And they've got a lot of young American talent that they've developed as well. Sebastian Salcedo scored one of the goals of the last week in their big win over Toronto. They've just been so inconsistent this year. They've only won back-to-back games twice, and that just happened with the game against Toronto. They're up and they're down, but when they're up, they're among the best teams in the Western Conference. It's just there's such a gap between when they have that down match that they're dropping points that they shouldn't.
What is the matchup that I need to look for when I'm watching this game Friday night?
That's a good one. I think it's on the flanks. I think it's Sebastian Salcedo and Jefferson Savarino. They're two wingers against Atlanta's outside backs, and it's probably going to be Franco Escobar. And it could be Michael Parkhurst. It could be Mikey Ambrose coming back into this. He's been healthy, and he played for Atlanta United, too, last weekend. That's going to decide the match to me, because when you look at Salcedo and Savarino for RSL, they're two wingers who are great on the dribble, and they like to cut inside and go for goal themselves. They're not really looking to get down the line and put in crosses. That's a little different, and Atlanta's outside backs are going to have to contain that, or Salt Lake's offense really gets going.
We're talking with Jason Longshore. Of course, he's on Twitter, at Longshore. He's brought to you by Heineken 0.0. Little inside soccer, Jason, because I think this is a – I know it's a small point, but I think it's just an intriguing one. When it comes to professional sports, all teams, NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, charter, okay? Not a surprise. But that's not true in soccer, is it? And there's like weird rules about how many times you could charter, and then if you get stuck flying commercial, you know, these tight schedules become, these windows become even more difficult to deal with, because you got to deal with the, you know, the verities like every other normal Joe does of commercial airline travel.
Yeah, MLS has a limit on four legs of trips that you can use a charter on. Now, they've made exceptions in certain cases. Vancouver, for example, their flight was canceled because of plane issues, the actual aircraft itself, and they had to get a charter last minute to get to New Jersey for the match with Red Bulls last night. So they've done this because, look, MLS 10 years ago was in a very different place financially than it is now. You still have some owners who are living in those days, in my opinion, and are looking at the bottom line very closely, and some teams have to look at the bottom line more closely than others. And they're trying to limit the, you know, level the playing field as best as they can. I think it has to change. I still don't know if every team is going to charter on every trip. I mean, we're seeing it. It's one thing to say that, you know, your NFL teams and your NBA teams do that now. Not every NBA team did that until, you know, last probably couple decades. But you're seeing college teams now. And, you know, maybe your top college programs aren't facing this just yet. But your next level, they're having problems paying for charters. They're expensive. And honestly, there's not as many charter flights and charter companies available as there used to be because of those expenses. So it's not a foregone conclusion that then everybody would just all of a sudden do it. And here in Atlanta, I think we're really lucky in that you have so many options for flight schedules that it's not always something you have to do, but there's definitely times that it would make the recovery and the opportunity to train so much easier, because there's times you lose a day of training.
Yeah, there's no
question of travel.
Oh, sorry about that. There's no question about that. But I'm asking you, Jason Longshore, have you been racking up on your freaking 5 miles, and are you taking care of that bit of you know, the part that you have to play?
Racking them up, yes. Yes. Have not used them yet. Racking them up.
Yeah, but you're saving it up for a good trip somewhere.
Yeah, right?
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
That's what I'm thinking. Jason Longshore joining us as we get ready for Friday night's game between Atlanta United and Real Salt Lake. So give me just a broad state of the team. The last time we saw the team, the last impression we had was, I know Tito's very doubtful for the game tomorrow, but was pushing and shoving and frustration and anger and all that kind of stuff against Red Bulls and 1-0 loss that ended the win streak here. Give me kind of a state of the team at the moment as they go into this game.
I think they're fine. I think they're tired. I think that's probably the biggest thing that you could see from that Red Bulls match. But this is a team that's 6-2. since the loss to Columbus. I mean, they've been playing really, really well. It's been a little different than maybe some fans had expected because it's been very defensive. But they're creating chances. They're getting shots. They're just not converting at the level that they have been. And that's been the biggest difference between 2018 and 2019, and honestly 2017 and 2019. And they're not scoring as many goals right now. It's not a measure of, well, they have more possession, so that's affecting their offense. No, the possession is pretty similar to what they had last year, actually. They're just not converting right now. And you expect that they will break out of that slump because we've seen them do that. But they're controlling matches in other ways. I, with this Salt Lake game and then Minnesota and Chicago to finish out this half of the season, I think you're going to have to see somebody else step up a little bit in the attack. And if it's Deion Pereira, who showed some great flashes at Red Bull Arena, if it's Justin Merrim, you know, who's just arrived, hasn't started, or if it started one, hasn't played a full 90 yet with the team, going to have to be somebody who steps up to give them a different spark in the attack. And sometimes it's just that different look, that different person, that different personality that can flip it.
Well, we all thought that was Pity Martinez once he got the first goal, and then
let's hold on now. Pity Martinez had a good match in Vancouver, and Pity Martinez looked tired at Red Bull Arena,
right?
Just like most of the team did.
Yeah, that's
so true. I think there's a whole lot of maybe unfair expectations on Pity Martinez to score 3 goals every match, and that's not really his game. If he's a double-digit goal scorer and assist guy in this league, I'm happy. If it's 10 and 10, if it's 12 and 12, that's a good day. That's a good season.
Thanks, Jason. Do appreciate it.
You're the man, Jason.
Appreciate it, guys.
All right, Jason Longshore on the WayForward.com hotline as they get ready for the game again. 8:30 pregame with Mike and Jason tomorrow. Kick at 9 o'clock tomorrow night from Salt Lake City, Utah, with the Five Stripes and Real Salt Lake. I wanted to get this team going. I mean, they're back in playoffs. They're back at third place. They're still right there. So,
yeah, but that's a lot of travel, John. There's right. A lot of moving parts. I mean, no excuses, because the one thing that I commend Carlos Bocanegra and Darren Eels and those guys for, the players, is that they've never given excuses for the position that they've been put in. You know, you're talking about CONCACAF playing against teams that have already got a leg up on you like 10 games in, 10 matches in before you play them. And then, you know, having a new head coach, and then having, you know, guys going away for international play. Oh, yeah, and then getting guys hurt and just trying to learn on the fly. No excuses.
The Braves are 50 games in. Some of the surprising numbers from the first 50 games. Next with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com.
Boy, what a gorgeous play at third he made. And he unloads on the first one. That's hammered deep toward left. Did he get enough? He did. Line drive home run for Riley, who continues to put on a show in San Francisco. Ambush time.
Swing feels really good right now. You know, that one little thing that we fixed with my hands to kind of get me on plane, you know, sooner has been a, you know, game changer for sure. And, you know, just hope to continue that.
Well, whatever that is, bottle it up. Keep it for the rest of your career there, Austin Riley. Welcome back to the Morning Show with John and you on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Braves win last night 9-2, and as a result go 4 games over 500. They're 27-23, 50 games into the Major League season.
So I mentioned. What's going on with Ender Inciarte. I was about to say his name wrong. But, yeah, Ender. Because I'm thinking that at this point, if Austin keeps doing what he's doing, and his defense is like he's pretty good defensively at third base, so I think they're going to – that's a nice problem to have.
It is a nice problem to have. He's only had 30 at-bats. Only played 8 games, has 4 home runs and 9 RBIs. You know how some people go way overboard with projecting the stats out? You see that projected for, you know? I mean, 4 home runs, 9 RBIs in 8 games projects out to 81 home runs and 190 RBIs or something like that. Now, I mean, obviously, he's not going to keep this pace up. He can't. But, you know, he is off to an incredible start just 8 games into his pro career, and what an impact he's had on this ball club so far. Braves and Giants at 3:45 this afternoon. The final game of a 4-game set, and Braves can take 3 out of 4, sending Kevin Gausman to the mound. I was looking at some of the numbers of the Braves because Max Fried got the win yesterday, Hugh. Did you know this, that Max Fried now leads the National League among all pitchers in victories? He has 7. He's the first in the entire league to 7 wins.
Congratulations to him, man. And you know what's funny? I knew it had to be something, because no matter what, when he's on the mound, I feel a little bit more comfortable about the game, the matchup, no matter who it is, when he's on the mound, for whatever reason. And I think it's partly because of he has a bulldog mentality when he's out there on the mound. And I go back to the game. Well, I forgot who they were playing, but I remember he was getting squeezed a little bit by the umpire, and he kind of gave him a look, and he locked in, and it was different. From that point on, it was just different, and I like that. I like that about him.
Yeah, so you got Fried with 7 wins leading the National League. You've got Mike Soroka, who I think he's a start shy of actually making the stats or something like that. But his 1.01 ERA would lead the National League. You'd have Fried leading wins and Soroka leading ERA. Not to mention the fact that Sean Newcomb's ERA since he went to the bullpen is, oh, by the way, 0.00.
Looked like he found his home.
Austin Riley has 4 homers. Did you hear what Murphy said on Dukes and Bell yesterday? Murph said he believes that Austin Riley is a 30 to 40 home run guy over the next 10 years.
That's not a bad. That's not bad.
Man, that's a 400 home run guy.
Yeah,
right,
that's
there
not
in
bad.
10 years.
That's not bad.
You know, I mean, and he's going to play for at least 15. So who knows how many home runs this kid might hit? We may be looking at a bigger star than we even imagined if he puts up those kind of numbers. So I tweeted out early in the program. We were talking it was like the opening segment of the show this morning, and I said to Hugh this because it's a fact. It's true. If the playoffs started today, the Braves would make the NL wildcard game as the road team in Milwaukee. And I said, I'm going to tweet this out and just see what kind of reaction I get. Because, you know, when you say something like that, there are people who work with us who take things on Twitter way too literally. You know what I mean? Way too literally.
Yeah, yep. That's what people do. Yeah. It's overreaction.
So I think some of the reaction to this, and I was just trying to just kind of have fun. Don't feed the trolls. That was one, and which is exactly what I was doing. But the playoffs don't start today. I knew I was going to get that one. Of course you're going to get that one, right?
Well, and I think part of that is because, John, for me personally, I look at the overall body of work. We live in, well, you live and die on a day-to-day basis with the Atlanta Braves. Now, I'm going to be a little facetious in my, you know, description of how you are, but one day you want to trade everybody, mm-hmm. and then the next day you fall right back in love. It's like being in a toxic relationship for you when it comes to Atlanta Braves. And it's almost like being in a cliffhanger every day, and one day you're about to jump off the cliff when they have an L, and then the next day you're singing the praises and talking about, you know, how we're going to win the World Series and nobody's going to be able to beat us, like things like that. But I get that because you are not the only one. You are not the only one. Just my timeline alone, when I look at whatever the Braves have done, people tend to either be far left or far right with the wins and losses when it comes to Atlanta Braves. And I tend not to look at it like that. I tend to look at it as a 162-game season, and I also look at it like this. I look at it, I break it down into series. Most of the game series are 3-4, 4-game series, and how do you fare in those series? That's the way that I look at it. If you win the series, if you go 2-1 in a series, a 3-game series, to me that's a win. No matter what that one loss looks like, mm-hmm. to me that's a win. When you look at what they've done up to this point, had – the 8-5-2 when it comes to series, tied 2. That, to me, is pretty good with 50 games in. Mm-hmm. You've won more series than you've lost. And that's how I tend to look at baseball. I look at the full body of work because they play too much for me to go up on this emotional roller coaster every day.
But it was just kind of an interesting little fact, and I don't put really any stock in it except for the fact that this team is now, I guess it shows you where they've come to despite all the warts this year that, you know, again, if the playoffs were to start today, and of course they're not going to start today, I fully understand that. We have 112 games to go. I just said it's interesting to note that right now they're in the playoffs at the wild card spot because you're just checking away, as opposed to what? Washington Nationals being in 14th place? You wouldn't note that? I mean, you're just noting where they are, that's all. I admit it was a troll. I was baiting people. When I tweeted this, I admitted it on the show as I wrote the tweet. And I got this one from Brandon. You're either in full panic mode or tweeting stuff like this. Take some meds, John. Well, I mean, again, I'm not in panic mode at all. I was just trying to see what kind of reaction I could get. And that's the reaction I got to talking about where the Braves sit right now. Now, that doesn't mean, again, that they don't have serious issues that have to be addressed in the bullpen, which we all understand. And we're sitting around, you know, will they talk to – oh, that's another thing that Murph said. He said he thinks, because I caught that interview yesterday, that the Braves will talk to Kimbrel again. So So they're at least going to make a run at him, Hugh.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, John, Craig Kimbrell's sitting in the catbird seat.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Because you're talking about, you know, you were talking to the Smalls this morning, you listen to all these teams that have bullpen issues. Yeah, he's sitting back right now, and he probably is not going to get what he was initially asking for, but he's going to try to get to as close as possible to that. And not only that, it's going to be a situation where how bad do you want him? It's probably going to really come down to that, how bad which team wants him.
Very latest update on the OTA situation with the Atlanta Falcons around the corner as we roll through this very busy and packed show on a Thursday with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92 on the game and 92onthegame.com.
Oh, it's such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.